Jacob has quite a decision to make here. What an opportunity. I mean, here he has this opportunity to be with a brother that he hasn't seen for many years. They can spend some time visiting, catching up as they travel on to Canaan. And his brother makes a kind offer to escort him and all of his family, all the servants that he has, all the people that are a part of his entourage, on into Canaan. And he has 400 men that, you know, could help in protecting them as well and making sure that they would get there safely. Just looks like a pretty good deal and a pretty good opportunity. But as Jacob says here to his brother Esau, he says, there are things about our journey, about what we need to be about and what we need to be doing, that is make it difficult for us to journey together. Here you are, 400 men, you're well equipped and you're in good condition and shape, and you have all these things at your disposal. It'll be pretty easy for you to just continue on in your journey, and we'd just slow you down. We have all these children, and we have all this livestock, and we have newborn among the livestock and such as that, and it will be difficult. And if we try to keep up with you, then we're going to lose a lot of our livestock. It's going to be hard on our children and such as this. So it's really just not a very compatible situation, even though it seems to be a very good offer and one that would seem in many ways to make sense. And so Jacob has to decline that good offer that his brother makes for him and to him. Now, this is an event that hopefully that we can as well learn something from. We can make some applications and we can make some comparisons and help us to maybe see some things that we could see in other ways, but just hopefully made a little simpler to see them in this example between Jacob and Esau. And that is that there are a lot of people who might like to journey with us, who might like to be on the road with us, who might like to spend time with us to pick out a destination and travel together. And I can understand that. I mean, I've been around you guys for a little while now, and you're likable people. You're fine people, you know, enjoyable. I think we could probably journey together. A couple of you, maybe not, but anyway. You just figure out who that is. And it's me, yeah. But anyway, I can understand that, that someone might, you know, want to journey together with us. But we find that it's not necessarily always the most conducive thing for us. It's not necessarily the most beneficial thing for us to journey with just everyone or just anyone that would like to travel this road or this pilgrimage along with us as Christians. And I can understand, especially as we look at Esau from a standpoint of the world, and we look at Jacob from the standpoint of one who is trying to walk with God and do what's right and please God, as to this comparison that we might have as to the world that would enjoy our presence, would enjoy our company because, you know, we're honest, we're trustworthy. They wouldn't have to worry about us lying to them or stealing from them and enjoy, you know, some of the other aspects of our company. I have found that quite a bit. There are people that are not Christians that are pretty decent people, fine people, that we have a lot of things in common. And it would see that seem like, you know, we should just be able to get along in all aspects of life, that even though we have these things in common and even though there are these things that are agreeable and likable among us, that to make a pilgrimage of life, to be going through life, will be difficult to do with them. And even they with us, that though they might not necessarily see it at the moment. As there are things that they might admire in us, there are also things that they wouldn't necessarily appreciate or enjoy that would be something that we might have as a conviction or a commitment or something that we would desire to do. And even though they might be friendly and kind and good-natured and fun and kind of a likable type of person, there may be things as well about what they would want to do on this journey that you and I wouldn't necessarily want to be a part of. And that's because when we consider the world and we consider us as Christians, that what motivates us in this journey as far as our goals, our aims, our objectives are different than what the world might want. Over in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 4, the Apostle Paul, talking about a time in which he saw the benefit of things from the flesh, and not even necessarily as far as this particular instance as being fleshly, being worldly, or, you know, being improper or not being right or righteous, but simply as being a part of that covenant that God had established that he was no longer working and journeying with men on as he lived as a Jew. And so those aspects that were beneficial to him in the flesh as being a Jew were not necessarily that would be beneficial to him as a Christian. So he says, though I myself might have confidence even in the flesh, if any other man think to have confidence in the flesh, I yet more. And so you see, the world, like what Paul was having to deal with when he became a Christian and thinking about what he was trying to accomplish as being a Jew, as well as being someone that was seeking to please God, that there were aspects of that would be satisfactory to his desires. Not evil desires, but just desires of the flesh to, you know, to be accepted among the Jewish populace, to be accepted among his people, and probably to be promoted and put into positions that would be very beneficial to him, but would not be accepted by them as him practicing or being a Christian. And so the same with the world. There are practices, there are things that the world might like to do that they are motivated and their objectives are determined by what they can get out of life, what the flesh, you know, promises and what the flesh hopes for and longs for. And so they maybe are looking at the way that they would journey in life quite differently than what we would. And so as Christians, though maybe at one time we ourselves journeyed by the flesh, we no longer see that profit in the flesh. And that's what Paul talks about then in the 7th verse of the same chapter. In fact, still talking about this very same thing. He says, howbeit, what things were gained to me, these have I counted loss for Christ. And so things that were beneficial to him in the flesh, things that had been beneficial to him if he had just remained in the Jewish religion, were not profitable to him as being a Christian. And so he said, I just had to discount those things. I had to consider those things as a loss. They were once a gain, but they are no longer profitable to me. And so Esau, a strong hunter, you know, a rugged kind of individual, a guy's kind of guy. And I don't know about you, but I like guys kind of guys myself. And I kind of like rugged and adventuresome and you know, hunting and fishing and going out and tearing things apart with our hands and, you know, ripping at them with our teeth, you know. And, well, okay, maybe not quite that, but, you know, I can appreciate someone like that. And I have friends and people that I am acquainted with and that I know in the world that are like that. I have those that are not even like that, but they're just fine, likable people. In fact, I had a good friend many years ago that, and I counted him, and I still would, he's no longer living, as a good friend, even though we didn't do a lot of things together. But the things that we did have in common, we appreciated about one another. But he was an atheist. And here I was, you know, a Christian and a gospel preacher. And he was a scientist, and here I am, a gospel preacher, you know. And But there are different things about who we were that just clicked. And he had introduced me to his friends. And he had said, I'd like for you to meet my good friend, Joe Griffin, the theist. And he said, of course, you guys know I'm a theist. And so there were those differences. And so we had some interesting discussions as well, like on abortion and such and such. He was actually a medical doctor. And so, you know, he looked at things, you know, from this other perspective. And we would argue those things. And there were just things we could not come to an agreement on. I really hated to have traveled from Kansas City to California with him. Because somewhere along the line, we'd probably booted one another out of the car, you see. Because there are these differences. And even though Esau is a likable and maybe not an overtly sinful man, he still has different goals. He has different things that he wants to do with life. When he gets up on Sunday morning, you know, he wants to go hunt and he wants to go fish and he wants to golf and he wants to do, you know, these other kinds of things. Well, Jacob has been groomed and he's been changed. And yes, there's a lot, you know, that he's had to learn about life and learn about life with God. But nonetheless, he has been gaining a whole new perspective on life since he and Esau last saw each other. And so their aims and their motives are different. We find that they were really pretty opposite. Esau may not necessarily have been overtly sinful, but he was, as the Hebrew writer describes him in the 12th chapter and the 16th verse, a profane person. Now, that word doesn't sound good whether you're a Christian or not. You know, even if I wasn't a Christian, I don't know that I'd necessarily want to be called profane just because it doesn't sound good, does it? And it's not good. But literally, it just simply means, in one sense, a person who doesn't appreciate spiritual things. A person who doesn't appreciate things that are from God or of God or about God. And so, a person might go, well, yeah, that's true. I don't really, you know, care that much about, you know, spiritual matters, pleasing God, maybe don't even believe in God type of thing. But, you know, I don't do a lot of things that I could do in the world. I'm a pretty decent person, but nonetheless, they are profane. They don't have this appreciation for spiritual matters. Now, kind of like Jacob in this matter, he has a brother. They are brothers. They had parted on terrible terms. We know that. You know, if you go back and read the story, and if you don't know it, go back and read the story, you find, you know, that Jacob wasn't even sure how he was going to be received. He thought maybe his brother was going to try to kill him when he came back, because he was trying to kill him when he left. You know. And yet now his brother cries and hugs him, and oh, he's so glad to see him, you know. And so, you know, things just seem so well and so good. And so here's this dilemma. This is my brother. This is, you know, someone that we have the same parents in common. You know, we have all these things in common, but we have a different direction in life. We have a different value system. We have a different core set of beliefs that we live by and that we're going to make judgments by. And so he's going to have interaction with his brother. I mean, there are things that they're going to do together that they're going to have in common, but there are things that would be a total distraction to Jacob and keep him from accomplishing what he needs to accomplish as a man that's now trying to walk with God. We walk in the world. We walk among those that are in the world. We ourselves have once been in the world. And we established friends even before when we were in the world. And so, you know, we have that dilemma. We have these relationships. We have these friendships. But it's kind of like a friend of mine said from back when I was in the world, and I hadn't made that necessarily any secret. I didn't talk about those things much until my sons grew up and were out of the home. But I haven't made it any secret that there was a time that I was in the world. And a good friend of mine when we were together because of the death of another good friend, and we were there for his funeral, that he looked across to me, and what he said to me was, you know, I really am going to miss Curtis, the man that had been killed. Because, you know, we could go out like at a time like this after a friend has died, and we could go out and we could have a beer and we could shoot some pool and we could talk things over and we could get a little drunk and things like that, you see. And what he was telling me was, you're not even fun anymore, Joe. See, we had a different approach to our grief now because we have different core values. We have different motives. We have different aims in life, different places that we want to arrive at. And so, Jacob most certainly had quite a dilemma before him. A profane person just does not appreciate the value of holy things. Back in the 26th chapter of Genesis, I'm going to have to skip reading these because I've spent a little too much time here building the idea for us, but I want us to clearly see what it is that we're trying to accomplish. But we find that Esau had married two women from the land, and that grieved his parents. The writer, by inspiration, reveals to us here in Genesis chapter 26 and verse 34 and 35, because he had married these women of the world. He had married these Canaanites. And so a little later, hoping then to appease his parents after he saw that his brother went off to get a wife from, you know, family and from people that had, you know, similar goals and motives and ideas and ideals and such as that. He thought, well, maybe then if I'll marry, you know, this second cousin of ours, that will please my parents. And so he married an Edomite or an Ishmaelite. A second cousin, thinking that would appease his parents. But that just grieved him as much. And so you see, he didn't understand what it was that his parents were grieved about in regard to the choices that he was making, because he's still making all these choices and decisions by the flesh. Jacob, though, had come to understand. He's had a journey. It's something that has molded and changed him. He's not the same young man that ran away from home, that fled because his brother was seeking to kill him. He's still learning and gaining a lot. But you see, Jacob realizes he's got to put that old life behind him. Now, this passage I do want us to turn to and read. In Genesis chapter 35, we find here in verse 2, it is recorded that Jacob then said to his household and to all that were with him, "Put away the foreign gods that are among you, and purify yourselves, and change your garments. And let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went." You see, Jacob said, so we've got to put away these foreign gods. We've got to put away, you know, all these ideas of all the nations around us and the peoples of which even that we have come from. And he says, I know now. He says, I understand that Jehovah is God and that He has made a promise to me. He made a covenant long ago, even to my grandfather. And now I'm getting what all that's about. I'm understanding this. And he says, we've got to put that back behind us. And so Jacob understood that life, the life that his brother is still a part of and still living in, that he can no longer live that kind of life. He may have to live among those that do, but he himself cannot live that kind of life. In Colossians chapter 5, for the Christian, we find, chapter 3, beginning at verse 5, that the apostle reminds us as Christians this same idea when he says, beginning at verse 5, "Put to death therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desires, and covetousness, which is idolatry, for which things' sake cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. You see, those that continue to live in that and won't change, those that continue to live a life in rebellion to God, Christian or not, they are going to suffer the wrath of God. And do you want to be found in that company? Do you want to be found on that road? Do you want to be journeying at that point, you know, with goals and ideas and motives of the flesh, when we've been called to leave those behind? And so he says, those things God will bring judgment upon those who continue in those things. Notice verse 7. One of the reasons he says, put those things to death. In verse 7 he says, wherein you also once walked when you lived in these things. Yeah, I know you did these things once. Jacob was like Esau once. He was a deceiver and a supplanter. But he has seen the staircase. He's seen the light. He's seen God. He's wrestled with Him face to face. And he says, you know, there are bigger things and there are better things and there are more important things. And all these other things are nothing. And so as Christians, yes, if we have lived that life, and we probably have, maybe not to the degree maybe that some others have, maybe you haven't to the degree that I have, but nonetheless, there are things that we have had to put away. Put to death, he says. And at one time, even though we walked in those, they're no longer a part of our life. You see, Jacob was going to live by a higher calling. Over in Genesis, the 35th chapter, we continue again here. After he said, let's put away all those foreign gods and let's put away those things and let's make ready for meeting God. Notice then in the 9th verse, and God appeared unto Jacob again when he came from Paddan Aram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall I make of thee, shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave unto Abraham and Isaac, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he spake with him. And Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he spake with him, a pillar of stone. He poured out a drink offering thereon and poured oil thereon. And Jacob called the name of the place where God spake with him, Bethel. That is, house of God. The residence of God, where God resides. You see, Jacob is going to live by a higher calling now. A calling of God. God had made a promise all the way back to his grandfather. Had chosen him and set him apart. And he says, and it's you, Jacob, a grandson of Abraham that I have chosen, that I am choosing now. I'm calling upon you. I'm giving you a greater purpose. I'm giving you a greater life. I'm giving you a greater journey. Like we sang, you're on the road to Canaan's land. And we sing that song representative of our goals and of our aspirations and of that journey that we are seeking to make. And we have a higher calling. Back to the 3rd chapter of Philippians, where Paul was talking about how he had once just considered the things of the flesh and how they benefited him, even though they were not overtly sinful things. But we've already covered all that. And there where he said, but I counted those things but loss. A little later he even talks about, I count them but refuge. They're just trash. It means nothing to me. It's like things that I would throw away because what I have now is of such greater importance. And then notice in the 14th verse he says, I press on toward the goal unto the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. You see, we have a higher calling as well. It's a high calling. It's a greater calling. It's a bigger calling. It's a more enormous. It's a more important. It's a more valuable calling than what we had in the world when we just said, well, I think today I'll get up and I'd like to have some ice cream, and you know, and I think today I'll get up and I'd like to go over here and play this game. I think today I'll get up and I'll go out and do some hunting. I think today I'll get up, you know, because we just did things that we were motivated by our own fleshly desires for. Not overtly sinful things, but just that was our goal. And so they were not things of a higher calling. The higher calling, as the Apostle Paul refers to in 2 Timothy, the first chapter, the 19th verse, as a holy calling. He says, whereunto you have been called unto a holy calling. You see, that's the difference between profane, what Esau was and what Jacob was becoming. The profane is that which doesn't necessarily respect that which is holy, that which is dedicated to God. But we've been called to a holy calling, a calling that respects the things of righteousness, the things that God has given, the things that God has revealed. And so like Jacob, you see, we find it difficult, or we need to find it difficult, to journey, to pair up with, and to move through life with those that do not have that same aspiration, that same desire, that same longing to be with God. We have been set free. We have been bought with a price. Titus tells us in 2:14, we have been redeemed. Peter reminds us that it was with precious blood, like the blood of an innocent lamb. It was the blood of the Lamb of God, the Son of God, Jesus the Christ. And we have been purchased by Him to be His, so that not only are the things that we are pursuing the things that are His, but we ourselves are His. As Christians, we belong to Him. The Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 that even our body, I've heard some say that spiritually we belong to God, but my flesh is my flesh. But not according to what God said. He says, I own you all or I own nothing. You're all mine or none of mine. You see, we have a different calling. We have a different journey. We are on a different road. Sometimes it crosses the road of those that are in the world. We are among it and we are in it. But nonetheless, there are things that are greater that we have. Now the world, like Esau, might say, you know, it's been a long time, brother, since I've seen you. You've got a lot of catching up to do. There are many years that you missed with mother and father, that you don't even know what went on. I could catch you up on all that. I could tell you all of those things. And you could tell me what's been going on in your life. And, boy, there's just so many things you see that we... Well, see, the world a lot of times enjoys the Christian. I'm going to get a little blunt here. But that's my job. And I feel compelled to do my job. I don't always want to do it, but hopefully that compelling motive overrides even what, you know, I want to do. But it's, as I have seen quite often, it used to be more and more among our young ladies, but I'm seeing it more and more now among our young men as well. But where worldly young men like our young ladies, they like that they're decent and that they're honorable, and they like that they can trust them and they believe that they will be faithful, and they want to date them and they want to marry them. But they don't want to be on the same journey with them. They like what the Christian young lady has to offer. but they themselves are still going to be in the world. And I see a lot of young ladies falling for it. And like I said, it used to be just among young ladies, but I'm seeing it more and more even among young men. For young ladies of the world like many of the benefits and like many of the things that a Christian young man have to offer. But they themselves do not want to commit to a life in Jesus Christ, to a holiness. And so you see, the world has a certain attraction to us. And that's as it should be, because hopefully we can attract them to spiritual matters as well. And the Scripture's even talking about, you know, the woman who is a Christian, how that hopefully that she can gain her husband who is not by, you know, living those values and being that person in front of them. But it's a roll of the dice. Who knows whether or not, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, whether or not you would win them or not to the Lord. Are we willing to roll that dice? And it's not just there. That's just the extreme of the example that I use. I remember an engineer back when I was trying to get my life back right and do the right thing and give up things that I had been participating in life, made an offer that 2 years earlier would have been attractive. But finally, as I'd come to my senses, almost nauseated me. But as we visited, as we were riding along on our locomotive, had a good visit, enjoyed one another, had a lot of things in common. He said, "You know, Joe," he said, "when we get back to the yard and we clock out," he says, "you're the kind of guy," he says, "I'd like to just go to the bar too and we can just sit and have a beer." And I said, "You know I don't drink." He said, "Well, you don't have to," he says, "but you know, I'd just like to just keep this conversation going, just continue to talk about these kinds of things." See, at one time that would have been appeal to me. I'd said, "Well, yeah, you know, let's go and have a beer and we can talk about these things. We can continue in these conversations. Maybe I can even, you know, convince you, you know, to become a Christian." But anyway, the point is that the world looks for the benefit that they can receive from us. We have to guard against that. We have to be careful. Oh, it's a fine line that we walk. We want to be a light. We want to be leaven. And we have been called, and we will live among the world, as I said. And we hope to be an influence. We hope to have enough contact. As the Apostle said, we can't go out of the world. Segregation from the world, it's not going to save the world. But we have to be careful with our journeying together with the world. Because the world says, and one of the ways that I got lured into the world is from people that we just had good, honest fun. It wasn't terrible things that we did. But it was like, "We're going to do that Sunday. Can't you just miss church this once? I mean, you go all the time, Joe. Can't you just miss this time?" Has the world never said that to you? Am I the only one? Has the world never said, after work, we all get together and go over to the park and have a few beers and toss the ball back and forth and, you know, and talk and unwind from the stress? At that time, I was carrying mail. I know, been railroad man, been a mail carrier. I've even worked for UPS. I've done a lot of things to help me continue to preach the gospel. But, hasn't the world ever said that to you? Surely I'm not the only one. The world has never said to you, "Why don't you just come once and see how fun it is?" The world's never said that to you. Guess not. No one's saying amen or, "Well, now I got a head finally shaking. Thank you, Hal. Thank you, Scott. Thank you." Yeah. I thought I was, you know, maybe an easy target or something. That might be saying something more. You know, Paul talks about over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, where that there's no temptation taking us, but what we can bear, and with each temptation, the Lord will provide a way of escape. That's verse chapter 10 and verse 13. We're all pretty familiar with that, aren't we? Are we as familiar with the 22nd verse of that same chapter? When he says, or do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than He? When he said, do you go out there and flirt with the world? There he's talking about idolatry. But that's what he's talking about when he's talking about, take heed that if you stand, that you don't fall, that there's no temptation overtaking you but what you can bear. That's all in the context of that idolatry. And then he says, but then you go out and you flirt with idolatry. You go out, you roam around among it like it was before you became a Christian. And he's going, and you go, but I'm a Christian now. You know, those things don't bother me. He says, are you stronger than the Lord? Are you trying to provoke Him to jealousy like the children of Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt? You see, we have to be careful. Where's the line? I know we want it just laid out clearly for you. Well, here's how much time you can spend, but you can't go past that time. Or here's how much... I don't know. I can't draw that line for you. It's different for you than it is for me. But I would say that we know that the line is being a little too close to. That it's being crossed when we try to make excuses for the world. When with the world we laugh at those that are like what we are supposed to be as Christians. That we make fun of Christians. Oh, they're just so, you know, they're so straight-laced, they're so conservative, they would, you know. Is that really the way we ought to be talking about, you know, our brothers and sisters in Christ? Yeah, they might be more than I am. But the world picks on us enough. The world doesn't need us chiming in, biting, devouring one another. Now see, I can talk about these things boldly when we don't have that. If that was a problem here, it would be really difficult, you know, to talk about that. But it is. To be forewarned is to be forearmed, something like that, isn't it? Anyway, there's a journey that we are on. There's a pilgrimage that we make. And Paul calls upon Christians in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning at verse 14, not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers because of that danger. Oh, there's one other thing I'd like to point out there that kind of gave Esau away. Esau said, come and journey with us and we will lead. We will lead. See, everyone wants to take the lead, don't they? The world wants to lead us. True, we cannot go out of the world. We will live in the world, but that doesn't mean that we have to be a part of the world. Well, this morning, if in any way the gospel of Jesus Christ is calling you, and you know that it is, and you know that you need to answer that invitation of Jesus, then we would encourage you to consider that this day. We would admonish ourselves and encourage ourselves to be a light unto the world and to be leaven, but to be cautious not to make its aims and its motives and its goals ours as well, that we do not journey together in the world. So there's our admonition and there's our invitation. If in any way you need to accept the invitation that the Lord extends through His children, then we invite you, come. Won't you answer His call as we stand and as we sing?
I must lead the whole by the way of the cross, and no one